I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tom Stackpole from Boston Magazine wrote the story about me that is in the physical, I think, March issue, and is now available online as of today, which is Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock. The Sound and the Fury, it's called. It's about Kirk Minahan, as I said, and Tom joins me right now. The Sound and the Fury, Kirk Minahan is loud, angry, and is good at making enemies. Now Boston's least politically correct sports radio star is opening up about his battle with depression and hoping to prove that tough guys have feelings, too. And we'll get into all the stuff right now with Tom. Tom, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, battling the flu?
I do have the flu. I'm calling homesick. I'm sad that I couldn't be in the studio to try this again, but... I think it's better for everyone that I'm sequestered.
Yes. Well, you and I spent, I'm gonna say between 8 to 10 hours together over what, 4 or 5, whatever, lunches, and as you took some notes on me as you getting ready to write this story. Is that right? Am I missing?
Yeah, no, I think we probably spent about 10 hours together, I would say.
And who else, how many people would you say you spoke to about the story?
Off the top of my head, probably, 10, 15, 15 people probably.
Yeah, and the process of a story like this, we talked about it last time. You pitched it, so then kind of got going. How long on a magazine story like this, which is what, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 words? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it came in around 4,500.
How long is that process, soup to nuts, pitching it to be sending it and hitting send and being done with it?
I think, this probably was about 2 months. Of me working on this and, other things. I'm an editor at the magazine also, so I had a couple other responsibilities. But pretty much, I think this is my main focus for about 2 months.
Okay, and so when you start a story like this, what is the pitch? So you pitch it. What is the pitch?
So in this case, I'd been watching you on Twitter talking about not being able to come back on WEEI. So this was probably in November. And, my sense of what the story was and what I was interested in was, here's a guy who's been controversial in the past and who is talking really frankly about his mental health in a way that you don't usually see kind of anyone do. And it seems like, he's maybe losing his job over it. So that was... the sort of pitch that I started with.
So then, I guess when you start digging into it, you find out about Bob Murchison. You and I talked about Murchison at length. I would say it was almost the way we did it. Maybe you can disagree. It seemed to me that you wanted to sort of talk segmentally, and that one day we would talk about sort of my mental health and my upbringing, or Murchison or radio. I mean, it's almost like every lunch had sort of a theme in your mind. Would you say that's probably true?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that. And you interview people a lot, so maybe you have a different style. But I feel like for print and sort of my process, I like to try to dig in and chat about something for a while, and I feel like I can probably have a useful conversation about maybe two things in one lunch.
Right. So one day was essentially about Murchison, and then you told me at the end of that you had talked to Murchison for a while, and just to fill in, just if you listen to this, my guess is you know, but I'll fill you in just in case you don't. Bob Murchison is a... an activist who has a transgendered son, born female, transgendered, is now male. And Murchison, I would say harassed, others would say contacted advertisers relentlessly. You'd agree that he's relentless, or you would say he's, how would you describe him in a word?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a pretty singular focus.
Okay, so there you go. Well, singular focus in what way, before we get to the other stuff?
Well, I mean, I think he is somebody who seemed to me to be pretty meticulous about having a a process that he would follow.
So meticulous in this process, single-minded in this process.
Yeah.
Okay, good. No, that's right. So he, you know, he's been doing this and continues to do it, by the way, with Mutt and Jerry, but has been doing this for a year and a half now. And you know, you get into the backstory. I've talked about it before that, you know, we had a meeting with him and all that. We'll get to that in a second. But sure. You're the first person to get him. The Sue O'Connell thing I did, I don't believe you put his name on the record. He gave a quote. But to you, he is quoted, and you speak to him, and you told me you spoke to him, I think you said that day, for 6 hours. Is that right? Or maybe that's not right.
I mean, that was a guess. I would say probably five. But yeah, we talked on the phone a couple of times at length. I would say probably three-ish times.
And what was your impression of him?
Well, I mean, I think, like I said, he's somebody who clearly has been pretty singularly focused on this. I think that he has been very cautious in terms of how he's engaged with the media on the record, as you have seen. As you mentioned, I believe that I'm the first person that spoke with him on the record.
That's right.
And got him.
That's
yeah.
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, in our conversations, he was, again, cautious and amicable. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's someone who also spent, you know, a year and a half listening to your show and didn't like it very much.
Is there a reason why you elected in this story not to mention his history battling with, say, the town of Ashland over stuff, or his neighbors, or his long, you know, history of legal entanglements? You make it seem like he's sort of singularly focused, but you would agree, I hope, you know, first I've asked this. I mean, I did, when I talked to you about Murchison, lay all this stuff out, correct? I mean, we did talk about all this stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there a reason why you elected not to put that in the story at all, even give it the sentence?
Well, I mean, I think
because to me, I think it's a game with him to some extent. I think he enjoys that. I think the people I've talked to who won't go on the record because they don't want to deal with this guy in their life anymore, whether it's people in Ashland or people he's had real estate issues with, I think that's important to note. If he's not just, you know, I think you paint him as some crusader for transgender rights, where I just think he's a guy who likes to fuck with people. And I think that should at least be given a sentence or two. So I guess I'd ask it again. Sorry, it's essentially the same question. Why was that never mentioned ever in the story?
Sure. I mean, I think so this was, you know, for the people who haven't read the story yet, this is basically dealt with in one section out of five.
It's a pretty big part of the story, though. I mean, it's a decent chunk.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's by in terms of its actual word count, it's probably more than that, because this is obviously a big part of the story.
As I said to you before, Tom, it's the only part I care about. So, you know,
yes.
We're going to talk about it. So I guess, I need to ask the question again, or?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I was answering it.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, you know, I think for me, this was a story that was first and foremost about you. You know, it wasn't a profile of Bob Murchison. He obviously features, you know, he's a significant piece of it. But to me, I mean, I think there are two different ways to look at this. And I think that there's the conversation about deplatforming, which is sort of a larger cultural issue and I think is really relevant to what he was doing. I mean, he was contacting advertisers and saying, you know, this is content that I think is offensive and, you know, do you agree or do you not agree? And, you know, do you want to...
Well, it's not, hold on. That's not really what he was doing. You're making it sound like he sent a little email and said, hey, just so you know, this is some content. Is this bothersome to you? I mean, he would send them emails to the point where, for instance, Kaplansky, as I told you, said, if you email me again, I'm going to, you know, contact the authorities for harassment. I mean, I told you that. So it's not, let's not make it out like he's this guy who sent out a couple of emails. He continuously sent out multiple emails, sometimes multiple emails a day. So he, you know, that, which I told you about, correct?
Yeah, you can
okay.
tell me that.
Okay. But I mean, that's what happened. So it's not, so, but go ahead, continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think to me, I felt like if I put his process out there, then people could decide for themselves on this issue. And I realized that.
But you didn't put his process out there, though.
How did I not?
Well, I mean, what I just said to you, what he did versus what you laid out are two totally different things. I mean, he took things, I mean, as I told you, and I told you this, he took things out of context. You know, he put Barstool stuff in there and insinuated that because we joked around with Portnoy that I was, you know, somehow like, you know, talking about little kids. I mean, he was doing things that were, he was using parody accounts as examples of things that I said or Jerry said, but we have no control over those accounts. Those aren't our accounts. So he was doing things that weren't true as well, as opposed, and also, by the way, contacted people to the point where some of them said, stop doing this. So, and that was, to me, his method, but go ahead.
Sure. I mean, you know, in the emails that I saw, and, you know, I both had emails that he provided to me, and then I, you know, emails are out there. You know, I felt like I was giving a faithful representation of what he was doing.
And then you're right, the host lashed out back at Murchison, dropping antagonizing barbs on the air and making veiled jokes about Murchison's home burning down. I asked you this last time. I asked you this in our texts. Have you found where I said that this man's home should burn down?
So the comment in question, the joke was made by Jerry. You know, and
what's the joke?
I don't have it in front of me. But if I can give you what I think is a pretty faithful parody.
When was it? Who provided you the audio of this joke?
I got it from Bob.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, okay, but it was you.
No, it wasn't. No. You just said it wasn't, well, and you just said, hold on. The host made veiled jokes about Merchant's home burning down. Jokes, plural, first of all. Is that true?
It was part of a riff. You guys were joking, Jerry.
We said that Bob Merchant's home should burn down?
Do you want me to answer the question?
Well, you're dancing around it. Did one of us say that Bob Merchant's home should burn down? I could tell you, Tom, there's no way that was said on the air. If we said that guy's name, we said the first syllable, Joe Zarbon in his office would dump it. So it's frankly impossible that that joke was said on the air. Impossible.
There was reference to, you guys were talking about the activist. There's reference to, well, you know, if Dino was still on the show, you know, a certain house in Metro West would probably find itself burned to the ground.
So
then you referenced the website that had doxed
Turtle Boy's website.
Yes.
How is that? So if John Dennis was on the air, which he wasn't, that's what Jerry said, and that's the hosts about a home in the Metro West. That's the hosts making veiled jokes, plural, about Bob Murchison. That's the audio that Murchison, as you just said, sent to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted a yes. So then at the end of that paragraph in your story, you say Murchison's phone was flooded with abuse, including death threats. Did he show you those death threats?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, and they were death threats from listeners of the show who said they were going to kill Murchison?
They were, to me, they were credible death threats. Or they were people.
Tom, do you believe, Tom, do you believe that I get people on Twitter saying that I should jump in front of a train all the time. There's a Twitter account called Minahan Splat. Do I think that man wants me to die or wants, of course not. Flooded with abuse, including death threats. Like you're going to, I know Murchison, he's going to go to the cops with that. You're telling me that these are credible death threats in your mind. Can you give me an example of one of them?
I don't have that in front of me, but
okay.
I mean, you're familiar with this stuff, right? It's like, you know, whether or not you think that somebody on Twitter who says, hey, by the way, I'm going to be outside your house at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning and, you know, that's going to be the end of you.
That's what one of the messages was.
You know, whether or not I think, I don't say that anyone was planning.
Well, you just said it was a credible death threat. Was it or not?
There were one or two that seemed, you know, that had the mm-hmm. sort of, you know, it's going to be at this time, this place, and yes, I'm gonna kill you. So, you know, do I know whether that person was intending to? You know, I don't know. But I think in terms of whether you look at, when you look at what a credible death threat looks like, something that, you know, a normal person would find concerning, if somebody said, hey, I'm going to come to your house at you know, 7 o'clock when you get home from work, and I'm going
to
shoot you.
Here's why I know it never happens, because Murchison would have gone to the cops. Murchison, whenever I try to contact him to come on the podcast, which I did, as I told you last time, I probably talked to him, and when we talked at lunch, I probably talked to him 10 times, 12, or tried to reach out 10, 12 times over the last year and a half. And every time I did, without fail, 90 seconds later, Mark Cannon, who I'll get to in a moment, is quoted in the story. The general manager of the station would call me and say, hey, just so you know, Murchison just called me and said if you continue to contact him, he's going to go to the police and file a harassment charge. A woman here, a salesperson, who, and again, I'm getting paid in full, so whatever. Salespeople are losing money over Murchison. Wrote him a long letter, talked about her son who has a disability, and said, hey, can we just have a conversation about this? I saw the letter. Murchison reached out again and said, I'm going to file harassment charges against you. I mean, are you aware of that stuff?
Yeah.
So he didn't go to the police about somebody saying they're going to kill him.
I don't recall whether he went to the police.
You don't recall, okay.
That, Bob.
Why did Shirley Luong, who worked with Murchison, coordinated Murchison, why did she only earn a line in your story? When I talked to you, you said you didn't have enough room for it. Now, this is a coordinated effort by the Boston Globe and Murchison, which Shirley told me. I mean, did you try and talk to her?
I did try to talk to her. She declined to comment.
So it only got one sentence because you didn't talk to her?
No. I mean, you know, there's the comment from Bob saying that he had been in touch with her, but that wasn't, you know, they didn't have a coordinated effort.
Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Intellectually, you're a smart guy. Do you believe that they didn't have a coordinated effort? I mean, what does your gut tell you?
I mean, you know, I'm a reporter. I ask people questions, and I see what they say, and I try to investigate.
Okay, what does your gut tell you on this?
You know, I think, again, in this, it's, I'm just going to go back to the source and say, you know, this is what I asked.
Okay, but I understand that, Tom. We all understand that. What is you're a smart guy. You can connect dots. I don't think you're going to answer the question, so whatever, it's fine. I mean,
I believe that Bob Murchison was sending material to a lot of different people. I don't have the sense that they coordinated.
Okay.
That's my honest opinion.
Okay. Would you say that you're left-leaning politically?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've worked for liberal publications in the past.
Well, I mean, what's your political? I mean, if we go look you up on Twitter, as I've done, clearly you're left wing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty lefty. I mean, I think my issues of choice are probably, you know, economic inequality and the environment. I haven't really reported much on culture war stuff.
One of the conversations we had was about transgender rights, and I thought, and you said this to me in our correct me if I'm wrong, is that you were surprised that Murchison would go after me because my thoughts on transgendered were in line with his. I mean, we said this at that lunch, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think my understanding of your views, which we've talked about, aren't that different from the views that he expressed to me. So, yeah, I mean,
my views on them are, I don't give a shit. And I don't mean that in a callous way. I don't give a shit about gay or straight or it doesn't matter to me. If it makes you feel better, if you want to be transgendered, if you're going through mental health issues, which a lot of those folks are, most are, I have sympathy for that, then knock yourself out. That's going to make you feel better. That is fantastic. So we talked about this for, I think, half hour, 45 minutes one day. And the one quote you get from me is, did I make some stupid jokes 4 years ago? Yeah. When it comes down to it, like, you know, am I for full transgender rights? Yes. I mean, that's seems like a pretty cavalier quote, doesn't it? Of all the ones to pick from?
I mean, I don't know. I to me, in the conversations that we had, you felt that you had your views misrepresented, right? Is that fair to say?
Well, I don't even feel that. No. Oh, by you or by in the past?
In the past.
By Murchison, yes. But I think, you know, I fought with John and Jerry for years about, say, the North Carolina issue, the bathroom issue, right? And I think,
yeah.
And they weren't even, you know, we live in a world now, and you and I talked about this, and I've talked about this, where if you have concerns about somebody who was born a male going into a bathroom where your daughter is, just concerns, then you're immediately labeled a homophobe, which to me is dangerous. To me, that shuts down the conversation. We're done. And I think that's where John and Jerry were. They weren't saying that these people were evil or they were creepy or whatever. They just, and my thing was, I think they should be allowed to do it. It's if they want to live that way, they should live that way. And we fought about that for a year, you know, as the conversation got bigger and bigger nationally. So for Murchison to sweep in and say I'm transphobic, to me, Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. It's like the Adam Jones thing. After a while, you know, you're going to say, well, fuck you, I'm not that way.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was properly, in my opinion, articulated in the story. I mean, we got that one line. Maybe you disagree.
I mean, I think I mentioned a couple times that you felt like your views had been misrepresented. And, you know, I tried to give you space to say that. And, you know, personally, in the conversation that we had, I mean, I think I don't think I would say that you have transphobic views. So
why didn't you say that?
Well, I think I let you say it. Don't you think that's valid?
Yeah, but I mean, but you can't give your own opinion. It's not, so there's no room for opinion in the story.
Well, I mean, I think that what I was trying to do with this story is, you know, is let the material speak for itself. I mean, I think I didn't want to be the judge of who was right and who was wrong. I think I wanted to put the information out there because there has been a lot of controversy over so many parts of this, and I wanted to just let the material speak for itself.
The other one is, and I mean, I don't know what to say about this. I hear it all the time. Is journalists who inadvertently crossed him told me that by doing so, meaning me, it resulted in some of the most vitriolic abuse they've ever received from online trolls. Obviously, I have no way of knowing that. But that, again, is almost in its way, the way it's written, the fact that it's out there, is almost an accusation. And then you say Minahan says that listeners are free to make their own choices. Well, I mean, isn't that exactly right? I mean, do you think I have some responsibility? Like, what am I supposed to do?
I mean, I don't know what you're supposed to do. What do you think you're supposed to do?
Nothing. I would say to them, if you say anything that's, you know, inappropriate, then don't do that. Don't be an asshole. But like, they're adults. They listen to a radio show. I mean, who are these journalists that you spoke to? They wouldn't put their name on the record?
No, they wouldn't put their name on the record.
Because of some of the vitriolic abuse they received?
Yeah.
Did they give you any examples of it?
They described being, you know, being flooded with, and again, this is the kind of stuff that you say, you know, well, you know, I receive it all the time. It's not that big of a deal.
I do.
And people react differently to that.
Well, but I mean, did they give you examples? Did they show you tweets?
They did, yeah.
What did some of them say?
Again, you know, I don't have that material in front
of me. So you don't have an example?
Okay, off the top of my head, you know, somebody had pictures of themselves, you know, taken and turned into memes, making fun of, you know, different things that they'd written about.
That's the worst vitriol. That's the worst abuse they've ever received in their life online. I mean, that's what you got? That's it?
Well, and then the sort of standard fare of, you know, flooding people's mentions with, you know, calling them, you know, telling them to kill themselves, that sort of stuff.
I don't think there's a lot of that. I find that I am on Twitter all the time. I very, 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 very rarely see somebody tell somebody to kill themselves. I mean, that almost never happens. That's just another one I don't believe. The Mark Hannon quote. So I guess Mark Hannon's not pleased either. He says, Mr. Merchant raised some valid points, but I think beyond the initial approach from him, we've also recognized some of the cultural challenges and worked really hard behind the scenes, he said, which is true. But he said you left out a big part of his statement out of the story. Is that true?
Well, I mean, we talked for 45 minutes and probably half an hour was off the record, and that we talked for probably another 15 minutes on the record. So, you know, I didn't include everything that he said, obviously, but I felt that was representative of what he'd said. So I'd be curious to know, you know, what he thought was wrong about that.
And then you talk about Merchant, just one more Merchant question at the beginning. He's driving around in his car and randomly wants to listen to Red Sox talk and puts us on right when we're talking about a transgendered issue. And again, you report that as fact. I know that he went on message boards looking for audio in the past about that conversation he's talking about. And I think I told you that. I mean, do you just report it as fact? Do you have any issues with that? Do you think maybe that's not, he didn't tell you the truth?
I mean, this was his version of the story. And I do know that he did research outside of this, but this was his explanation for how this started.
Okay. Tom Stackpole, I appreciate you coming on. I know you're battling the flu. Go lie down, feel better. I got to say, you know, had issues with it. But I appreciate, you know, most 99.9% of the people would not have come on. So I appreciate you coming on. And any other questions for me? You've asked me enough.
No, you know, I think I appreciate you having a conversation about it. I know that you didn't like all of the piece, but
did you think I was going to?
I don't know, actually. I think I tried to be fair and I tried to be faithful, and I appreciate all of the time that you gave to me and the conversations that we had. I know that, well.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I know this, the merchants and stuff is something that has been really frustrating for you for a long time.
Well, also play the factor, I think, in my mental health and the deterioration of it. And I think that should have, just if you're going to do a story about me and that, I think that should have been mentioned in there somewhere.
Wait, how do you mean? I'm sorry, I just don't understand the question.
Well, I think the stress I felt, and I think Merchant played a role in that, I think played a role in my mental health, my deterioration. I got obsessed with it. I've talked about that. And, you know, I thought there should have been a spot in there somewhere. If you're going to write the story, if you're purporting the stories about my mental health, my battle with it, then Merchant's role in it, whether he knew it or not, I think deserved a mention or two.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. I mean, there's in that section four, you know, I talk about your mood deteriorating and I think that was a pretty clear correlation. But if you felt that I didn't do a good job of that, then I truly apologize, because that was not my intent.
And my last one is, I mean, what are you doing talking to a professor of social work at Sacramento State about fucking sports talk radio? I mean, that's like, you didn't know shit about it. He's never been on the air.
I mean, really,
David Nyland?
I agree to disagree.
How does he know about it?
He wrote a book about Jim Rome.
What? Who cares? I'm on the air. I fucking need David Nyland. I hate when these people talk to these professors. Just talk to me. Talk to other people on the air. What the fuck does he know? There's this ongoing tension between, he says, reproducing traditional or toxic masculinity and then opening up alternative forms of masculinity in all of places. That's happening in sports talk radio. What? I'm a pretty smart guy. What the fuck does that mean? I mean, what does that mean?
Do you want me to explain the quote?
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, my understanding of it is that, you know, the sports radio is basically, you know, the way guys talk to each other, right?
Some are. Some shows are. Some aren't, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, some of that, in this guy's view, is a lot of the way that guys talk to each other is, you know, we make fun of each other, we kind of put each other down, we make jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, in his view, is reproducing the ways that we're sometimes unkind. You know, or can bully each other or whatever. That said, you know, there are examples where that same style of conversation is used to have really serious conversations. I mean, I think in a way it's not revelatory. It's the idea that sports radio is having the same conversation that NPR is having. They're just having it in a really different way.
This guy ever? You have any idea if this guy ever listened to me or not?
What's that?
Do you have any idea if this guy ever listened to me or not?
He wasn't terribly familiar with you. But so I think that it was that the purpose of that quote was to sort of talk about sports radio writ large.
But I do it differently than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tried to talk about the ways that you are, that you have your own style, and that you know, are the ways in which I think you are exceptional. So,
all right, well, whatever. I don't give a fuck about David Nyland. So anyway, Tom Stackpole, Boston Magazine. If you want to read the story, knock yourselves out. It's available online now. The physical magazine is out there right now, so if you're waiting to get your prostate worked on, your teeth cleaned, give it a read before you go talk to your shrink. That's where I read it. Go in and do it. Tom, like I said before, I had my first one there before I was going to kick you out. I appreciate you coming on. Many people wouldn't do it. So I do appreciate that. Feel better, and I'm sure I'll talk to you down the line at some point.
All right. Thanks,
Tom.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.